How's it going? And welcome back to On the Wire, a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. And if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe, and as always, I am joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings. Kevin, I'm really happy to be here, and I'm feeling close to 100%. I got my second vaccine shot yesterday, and earlier today, I thought I was going to die. I did everything everybody told me to do. I overhydrated the day before. I overhydrated the day of, and it was fine. I was fine last night, but I took a nice long nap. Let's just leave it at that. While my 15-month-old was napping, so was I.
Yeah, when I got my second, I was actually in the process of unpacking after a move. And so I can't be 100% certain, but I was absolutely exhausted the rest of the day and slept half of it away. And pretty certain it sounds like we had similar experience.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible. I'm just glad that I was able to make it. I really wasn't going to miss this because thankfully we have some added help today to help us navigate through fab options this week. We are fortunate to have with us Toby G, perhaps better known as Batflip Crazy. Toby, of course, can be heard regularly on his own Batflip Crazy Fantasy Baseball podcast and comes to us after amassing an impressive resume of recent wins across many NFBC leagues, including just in the past 2 years, 4 main event league titles, 3 draft champion league titles, and finishing 5th overall in the 2020 online championship. You can learn a little bit more about Toby by visiting batflipcrazy.com, which I believe was just updated by Toby's wife. So good on her. But in the meantime, we'll get to pick his brain a bit more right here. Toby, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both for having me so much. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I was joking around before the podcast. I'm glad that I was previously good at fantasy baseball because it appears as though this year that was my small sample good fantasy baseball production. I'm now entering we're stabilizing at this point, and I'm a little bit not that good. But I really appreciate you both having me on. It's awesome to be here. And I'm excited to hear you both got the vaccine. I got the vaccine as well a little bit ago. And had a similar experience in terms of the side effects, but knocked me out for 6 hours or so, took a nap, felt better, and nice to also be fortunate enough and privileged enough to not have to go through the experience, hopefully, of having COVID and feeling like that for an extended period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how many tweets we see after 60 games have gone by and like screenshots of where everybody is in their standings. Like, if only this was 2020, this is where I would be. I'm anticipating that every 60 games or so.
I need a little longer than that. I've started off slow at 60 days. I don't think hopefully I'm much better, but it's going to take more than 60 to climb out of the hole I'm in.
Luckily, we got 162. All right. Well, we're going to jump right into it. We got a few news and notes to go over. And as always, I'll go back and forth with you guys with these and pick your brains about what based on what we've seen all week and how this might affect some fab bidding going forward. First and foremost, Kevin, last week we talked a lot about some guys we might expect to get the call up. And one of them we didn't discuss that who just did get the call was Alex Kirilloff, called up hopefully for good by the Twins. He is a must add in all formats, right?
Absolutely. Or he will be added in all formats. What we get out of him obviously is yet to be seen. I am in the one TGFBI league where he is available and I could use the help. As we talk each week, I'm pretty conservative with my bids early in the year. And there are some questions there for playing time. Even if he does play well, it could be a crowded situation. So I'm not going to go overboard. In fact, I don't expect to get him, but I'm definitely going to put some bids in on him.
Yeah, I was luckily he got called up, I believe, on a Thursday during the off day, and it was announced he was getting called up. So I was able to plug him into a couple of my lineups, including a couple like DCs, which was nice to have him in for the weekend. Toby, do you have Kirilloff stashed away anywhere?
No Kirilloff stashes for me, unfortunately. So I don't think he's probably going to be available in any of my leagues that I have right now. But as Kevin mentioned, definitely somebody you want to be looking at adding if you can this week. A little bit of speed, a little bit of power, decent batting average, at least when you look at the projections. And that's certainly that type of a skill set is something that I think a lot of teams need at this point in time.
Yeah, a hit tool for Kirilloff, definitely his kind of carrying tool in conjunction with everything else. In conjunction with Alex Kirilloff, Spencer Howard was called up by Philly. I believe he's joining their bullpen. And Nico Horner was called up by the Cubs, just as Shelley Verstrate, our guest last week, predicted on last week's pod. Toby, are you interested in either one of those guys?
Yeah, I think so. With Howard, the thing that I find interesting, he's up 2.6 miles per hour, at least according to Fangraphs. Over last year, obviously, he only pitched 2 1/3 innings, and he may have been a little amped up. But I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, his velocity was also up a little bit in spring training. And so those are the types of players that I want to take a shot on. I don't see him listed as a starter, so it may be that he maintains that relief role, at least at this point. I think Vince Velasquez, who I'm a pseudo fan of, is in their lineup, is in the rotation right now, but and Moore is coming back. And I'm not sure what type of chance he's going to get, but I do think it's worth like a small bid if you can, just to have him in case he does get back into that starting rotation. Because I think he wasn't great last year, but if that velocity increase holds, that could really move him up and have him playing a little bit like we expected. I think a lot of us expected last year.
And then Nico Horner making a name for himself recently, looking pretty good in Chicago as well. Kevin, do you see yourself considering Nico Horner this week?
Yeah, I think so. Another guy that we can have a little bit of speed, a little bit of power. A lot of people were very disappointed he didn't start the season with the Cubs. But I think, and here's the thing for me, the Cubs lineup is finally putting runs on the board. So I think that helps a lot as well, the lineup around him. If the Cubs are going to be scoring runs, he can be producing in that lineup. Yeah, he's somebody I'd like to add. He is another one, though, that I don't expect to have the winning bid. But there's a lot of players available this week. So some of these guys are going to slip through the cracks. So that's just something in general I'd like to add. Put them in as conditional bids on a lot of these guys, because some of them will fall through the cracks for a little less than we expect. I am expecting.
Yeah, Horner played the last two games, one game at second, one game starting at shortstop. And Eric Sogard has not seen a lot of time in the lineup for Chicago as well. So Nico Horner could see the bulk of playing time, at least at second base moving forward. So definitely somebody to monitor. Kevin, Dylan Lamet, he returned and quickly left. As he returned, he was gone. He left Wednesday's game with right forearm discomfort after just 29 pitches. Along with that, Adrian Morione is looking like he's looking at Tommy John surgery. I'm curious to know, and we've mentioned him on the pod a couple times, does this solidify Ryan Weathers' spot in the San Diego rotation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was solidifying it as is. I'm more interested in who else we may see soon for the Padres, because I think Weathers is in there for sure right now. And Chris Paddock hasn't been great. Of course, Mackenzie Gore is the first name that comes to a lot of people's minds. And who knows when we may see him in leagues where you are non-NFBC leagues, where you can stash minor leaguers if he's available. I might start thinking about it if I have an open spot. But Ryan Weathers for sure.
Our own Andy Patton over at Pitcher List tweeted out a thing about Mackenzie Gore, saying that he has a reliable source that the left-hander Mackenzie Gore is suffering from the yips. And then I would explain San Diego's silence about their top pitching prospects. So Andy Patton, again, at Andy Patton PNW on Twitter, posted that earlier today. So that's something worth considering, the fact that all the questions revolved around why he wasn't called up last year, during the time where pretty much everybody was being called up. And it's like in Houston with Forrest Whitley being called up and nobody really understanding why he should be the first one up. But neither one of those guys getting the call. So I think a lot of people have had their own questions about Gore based on the fact that there was really, on the surface, no reason not to see him in San Diego. But this would, if true, if this source for Andy's is true, that would explain a little bit more as to why he you know, wasn't competing for that final rotation spot in spring training per se. It was between Weathers and Morion, and why he hasn't been called up already. So something definitely to monitor. I'm pretty happy to have Ryan Weathers myself in a few spots. And I actually had him in the lineup when he got that 3-inning save earlier in the week. And then luckily threw him back in the rotation in that same league for this last start. So I think he's going to be in my rotation for the foreseeable future as well. Toby, Starlin Marte was diagnosed with a rib fracture in Miami. Should be out for a while. Lewis Brinson took over center field duties, it seems. And do you see any other targets in the Miami that might see extra playing time due to Marte's absence?
I don't know if it's due to Marte's absence necessarily, but I think John Birdie, it sounds like, is going to get the reps at third base with Brian Anderson going on the IL. And obviously Brinson going in for Marte, or them mixing and matching kind of in the outfield, I think is what will end up happening, because Sierra was already up and they can potentially platoon. But I think Birdie is actually the big winner in the overall grand scheme of things. And obviously a really nice source of stolen bases. I know he's been dropped in some leagues, even some main event leagues as well. So it might be a short-term plug-in to try to boost those stolen bases, decent batting average, maybe a little bit of runs there. So that, I think, for me, is it's not directly related to Marte, but I think is a guy who will probably benefit the most from everything that's happening with the Marlins right now.
Birdie, of course, already has second base and outfield eligibility at NFBC. If he's playing every day at third base, he'll gain that third eligibility as well. So that'd be really nice. And regardless of who he's playing, Birdie's going to steal some bases as long as he has the playing time. I've had my eye on him the last couple of years. I love having him for those spurts where he gets like 4 stolen bases in 2 days and things like that. So I like the call out there. Hey, Kevin, I wanted to make sure you knew Colton Wong returned for the Brewers. I did move JBJ down from the leadoff spot. I don't really have a question here. I just wanted to make sure you knew, because I know you have Colton Wong pretty much everywhere, and I wanted to make sure you got him back in your lineup.
Definitely in the NFBC leagues for the weekend, I did. Unfortunately, it was a little late in the week, so I left him out of my weekly leagues, but he'll definitely be back in there Monday.
Nice. All right. Another player returning to the lineup, Kyle Lewis, returned to the Mariners lineup. No word on a Jared Kelenic call-up in their outfield. And so, Toby, my question to you is, how long do you hold on to Kelenic in, say, a 12-teamer?
I really think a lot of these types of decisions are all contextual based on what's going on with your team. How hard are the IL, or are the injuries hitting your team? How desperate are you in terms of your production thus far? Obviously, it's early to be desperate, but as we were talking before, there's some cause for desperation in certain situations. So I really think it's all contextual in a team. Obviously, with a 12, the waiver wire is so much better than a 15 that you may be able to reproduce something similar to what you might expect from Kelenic, or at least Kelenic's projection. You're talking about potentially 2020 guy over the course of a full season. And while that may be hard to roster or pick up a guy in free agency that provides you with that, and know that's going to happen ahead of time. If you do mix and match, let's say you pick up Birdie for a little while, and then when he's out of the lineup, then you replace him with a little bit of a power guy, you can cobble it together. So I don't think he's a must hold necessarily in a 12. I would probably give it until a week or so into May. Drafting him, you probably were expecting maybe a late April call up, early May call up. I know I drafted him in a main event, and I have him hanging out on my bench there. So I think you don't want to, but if the situation calls for it, I don't think in a 12 it's egregious to let him go. Because the challenge always with prospects is sometimes they hit and sometimes they don't, right? For every Ronald Acuna, you know, remember Mike Trout was awful his first time coming up. And I didn't know what he was going to be, but he was the top prospect in baseball, even ahead of Bryce Harper at the time that he came up. And yeah. So that's a long way of saying I think it all depends on the team. Just be cognizant of what you were expecting from him and trying to replicate that if you have to move on from him, which, again, it sounds like the Mariners are going to be a little bit slower in having him come back than some of us were anticipating.
Yeah, I got Kelenic in a couple places myself. And luckily, the places I have him in, I don't have an IL crunch, so I don't have the roster spots that I need to turn and burn to fill the active roster spots. But when the time comes, if he's still not up, he'll be on my mind for sure. Kevin, in Baltimore, other outfield being adjusted, Austin Hayes has returned from the IL, and Anthony Santander goes on the IL with the sprained ankle. Do you see any effect on a somewhat crowded Baltimore outfield there, or do you think that's just a one-for-one swap?
I think it's a one-for-one swap for now. It'll be interesting to see if DJ Stewart performs well, what they do when Santander comes back. But for now, I think it's pretty much a one-for-one swap.
And then a little bit more noticeable outfielder on the IL, Juan Soto from the Nationals, hits the IL with a sore shoulder. Andrew Stevenson has been starting in right field and batting leadoff for the Nationals. Toby, do you have any interest in Stevenson?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of interest. He's had spurts where he's played really well. He brings a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. The batting average at decent. Yeah, if you need plate appearances, I'm not sure. Has he been playing every single day?
He's played every day since Soto went on the IL. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess so. Again, especially if he's batting leadoff, you're getting plate appearances. And a lot of times with the wire, you're trying to hit gold a little bit. And so it's not always a matter of putting in the best player available. The one thing I think I remember about the Nats is they do only have 5 games this week. I think they have 2 against Toronto, and then they have the 3 versus Miami. So he may not be like top of my list just because Miami obviously has a really good pitching staff. I want to say that I think they're going to miss Alcantara, so they'll probably be getting Lopez and Tyler Rogers. So it's not going to be a great week, I think, for the Nats. So I wouldn't have him at the top of my list. And it doesn't sound like Soto's going to be gone for that long. But if as a conditional bid towards the bottom, I wouldn't spend too heavily on him for a 5-game week if he gets that, because there's a couple lefties, I think, in there too.
Yeah, I think that 5-game week really hurts him in that situation. Just it's really hard
especially because there's 15 teams that have 7 games this week. So a 5-game week this week is worse than usual.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a lot of five weeks in my lineups coming up.
All right, Kevin, Donovan Solano left Wednesday's game with an apparent injury. Do you see any beneficiary in San Francisco with Solano being out?
I think so. Wilmer Flores is a guy early in draft season in a lot of the draft and hold leagues I was grabbing, and he wasn't quite getting the playing time that he had for a lot of last season early in the year, but he's in the lineup again tonight, and hopefully stays in there, and we see some of what we saw last year out of him.
And one thing to be aware of, too, with the Giants situation is it sounds like Evan Longoria, he's day-to-day right now. It doesn't sound like they're going to put him on the IL, but there was a quote today that he's going to be he could be day-to-day for a little bit. And so I'm not sure what day-to-day for a little bit means, but there should be some openings in that lineup. And a guy like Flores, who maybe platoons a little bit more often, is going to have a lot more opportunities to play, I think, as are some of the other infielders there.
That's where they have him tonight, is at third base.
All right, we'll move on to some pitcher news. Luis Patino was added to the Rays taxi squad on Saturday, expected to join the roster on Sunday. Supposedly, he's been training with starters workload at the alt site. Toby, can Patino be a solid play this season moving forward?
Yeah, I think we know about the prospect pedigree. Obviously, the Rays have done wonders for a number of pitchers who have struggled with other teams and have come over and been able to rectify things or whatever the approach they have. They really try to leverage the best that pitchers have. And so I think that's encouraging, at least for Patino. It wasn't great necessarily last year out of the bullpen, some major control issues. So that'll be something that he needs to rectify as well. But again, if you're thinking about the waiver wire and if he's activated tomorrow, is he supposed to actually start tomorrow? If he does start tomorrow, then you get a little bit of a glimpse. But always the difficult part with that is if he pitches really well, then those bids are going to be like $100+. If he pitches poorly, it might be an opportunity. Again, I don't think I'd do anything too extreme because I think they have their starters as long as they hold on to Rich Hill. And some of the other guys are pitching well. I would put in a lower bid on Patino and maybe see what he did. The skills last year, 10.3% swinging strike rate, 8.2% K-minus walk, but he did have close to a 25% strikeout rate, which is good, but the walk rate was incredibly high. Wasn't really getting people to chase on pitches outside the zone last year, but I believe it's his slider. It's either his slider or his changeup that I think is a plus pitch. his slider, it looked like, was the best pitch for him last year. So maybe the Rays can get him throwing that more often, because he was very heavily four-seam fastball last year. So maybe the Rays will have him integrate some a little bit more of that secondary stuff. And that might be a place where he could take a step forward quickly. So long way of saying, as you'll find, I can be long-winded. Go with lower bids, I would say. Nothing extravagant, but it may be interesting if we get a chance to see him pitch tomorrow on Sunday.
Yeah, he is slated to pitch on Sunday. Kevin Cash wouldn't say whether or not he's starting as the opener or coming in after Josh Fleming, who he says should be expected to take the bulk of the innings from that game. So either way, he, you know, probably isn't going to come in and pitch more than one or three innings tops Sunday, but that's enough to make him active in NFBC leagues where he wasn't drafted, which I assume probably was very few leagues across, unless it, except for your very deep leagues and probably DCs.
Yeah, that's true. Good call. Yeah, and I think the key thing with guys like this is you want to get to them before they blow up. So even if he is just the opener and he's throwing 2 to 3 innings, don't be afraid to try to stash him, even though if you have that ability and that flexibility, because we see it every week and it's easier said than done, but you can get him when he's going for $10 instead of when he just hit his 5 innings and he pitched really well and he's going for over 100. That's key.
Yeah, you almost hope he only, like, he is the opener and only goes an inning, so he's not making a big splash right before bidding happens later that day.
Yeah, or if you have Fleming on some teams, then you definitely hope he's
the opener. It's true. I was considering grabbing Fleming on a first-come, first-serve league I'm in for a stream tomorrow. Now that is a lot more tempting. All right, sticking with pitching, Kevin, in Milwaukee, Brett Anderson and Josh Lindblom were placed on the IL. Curious who you think fills the rotation spot in Milwaukee, and follow-up to that, do you actually care who it is?
Maybe. It's interesting. The Brewers don't know yet. They still have it to be determined for Wednesday's start. They have some time. That's still 4 days away. I'm thinking probably Eric Lauer. I'm guessing
Toby's in agreement.
And it's we throw last season out the window. I think 11 innings, right? I'm not even paying attention to the numbers he had in 11 innings last season. And yeah, I think he might be worth a stab. Toby said if he comes out and has 4 or 5 great innings on Wednesday, then he's going to be a lot more expensive next weekend. So I think he might be worth a shot if you have room. I may not use him this week, but I may grab him this week, and so I can see what he looks like on Wednesday if he is indeed the guy.
I'm a really big Eric Lauer fan. Have been for a couple seasons, which has not treated me well at all. I really liked when he was actually traded to the Brewers last year, so I picked him up in Dynasty. I drafted in a bunch of places. I had him in my lineups when he had a bunch of his terrible starts. I drafted him in 70% of my draft champions leagues this year. And then he just totally was bad during spring training. So I think Kevin mentioned, definitely wouldn't start him this week. I would even have trouble if he pitched well, starting him the following week. But I do think that Eric Lauer has some skills, and he showed those with the Padres, and he has the potential to show those with the Brewers as well. So he's definitely interesting. And then the guy that they did call up, which I think it's just for as a reliever, but is Phil Bickford, who used to be a higher end prospect. And if you look through his minor league record, has some really compelling stat lines there. And so apparently he pitched in spring training and did really well as well. So I don't know if he's going to be, I don't think he's going to be the starter there. It sounds like they were getting him, he was pitching in relief during spring training. So who knows? But just a couple interesting guys. And just remember, the Brewers have done wonders for a lot of mediocre pitchers. And they have some really talented staff there. And so I'd be very interested in who gets that gig there. Obviously, Brett Anderson, maybe he'll come back. But if they show any signs of life, they will probably replace Brett Anderson in the rotation. And I also have a lot of Brett Anderson on a bunch of my draft champions leagues. So.
It's something to note, since Kevin, you mentioned it was the start on the 28th for the Brewers, which is hosting Miami. So that start alone is tempting on the surface, but that would also line whoever takes that start up. If they perform well and they can stick in the rotation, that lines them up for a two-starter the following week. where they'd be traveling to Philly and then traveling back to Miami as well. So it's whoever ends up with the spot, something to consider, something to look at as if nothing else, just as a nice stash. And we'll get into a couple of future two start pitchers as well, but you can add Lawler or anybody else to the list in Milwaukee.
I'm so happy we talked about Eric Lauer. This really it really warms my soul, honestly. Fantastic.
Another guy I have in a couple of leagues that I might consider using if I really don't have a full staff I want to throw out there is Brent Suter. He gets multi-inning already. He pitched two innings today and got the win. If they decide to do something like that next Wednesday, it might be worth having him in there because even if they don't, he'll have some relief opportunities throughout the week anyway.
That's a fantastic call. I love that. Also have a lot of Brent Suter on about 70% of my teams. I guess I didn't realize it until now, but I think my draft champions strategy was just to draft all Milwaukee Brewers pitchers other than the good ones. So no Burns, no Peralta, a little bit of Woodruff, but
not enough. All right. We have another starter come back and almost as quickly leave. Jake Odorizzi leaves his start on Saturday. He only got one out. He left early with a tight forearm. Never like to hear that from your pitcher. Kent Emmanuel made his MLB debut and pitched 8 2/3 inning. So he finished the game in relief. So that was impressive. Toby, who do you think steps up in Houston for the rotation? Do you think Emmanuel has earned that spot with this one relief outing, or do you think there's somebody else like Luis Garcia or somebody else?
Yeah, I was going to say Luis Garcia. This, to me, seems like the kind of natural fit. I know he'd be a couple days off his usual turn in the rotation, but he's pitched so well. It seems like he would get that. And that's pretty cool. Somebody cracked an Immanuel Kant joke about Immanuel Kent on my Twitter feed, which I really appreciated. It's really nice to be able to go into that start and you're pitching 7 2/3 with a 14 run cushion. It was always pretty nice. Although he didn't have that for the whole game. But yeah, no, I think Luis Garcia he's pitched really well. If you look at the skills, he's been really good. And we know Houston has done some great things with some young pitchers now, with Urquidy pitching the way that he has so far this year and others. He'd definitely be the one that I think would be on my radar the most. Though I do need to dive in a little bit more into Immanuel Kent and figure out what his philosophy is.
Yeah, 27-year-old making his debut. And you don't see very many guys making their debut in relief and going 8 2/3.
So super impressive.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right, and we'll end with this one. Kevin, Greg Holland went on the what I call the one-day IL, which is more and more common this year. He returned and just to see Josh Staumont get the save on Saturday after Staumont also pitched the ninth with a 4-run lead on Friday. Are you reading anything into this more than any of us as the House Royals fan? What can we – I think I saw a tweet. I don't forget who it was, but – it might have been Adam Silver saying that the Royals have had six relievers get saves this year, so that they're trying to fight Tampa for that record from last year. Is there anything to read into this?
They each have one save. No one has two.
Right.
And unfortunately, as a Royals fan, I think Greg Holland is still going to get another opportunity here. Even prior to the one-day IL, however, he gave up 3 runs in his last outing. It was not a save opportunity. I know that is weird for some relievers sometimes coming in. They were down 6 runs, something like that, and he gave up 3 more. But I don't think they're going to give up on him quite yet. Although Matheny did give up on Ian Kennedy pretty quickly last year. The thing I took out of today the most is a lot of people think that Barlow may be the guy, but they used him in the eighth. I think he's the eighth inning guy. I don't think Barlow is going to become the primary closer for the Royals. I've thought all along the guy with the most saves for Kansas City this year would be Staumont. I don't think it's his job yet due to today, but 2 strikeouts and shutting it down and only a 1-run lead can't hurt. So I think it's coming. It still might be a few weeks, though.
Yeah, he's looked good pretty much all season, including his Friday outing as well. So definitely a situation to monitor, because we know how much we all love monitoring closer situations across the league this year.
Nothing better.
Nothing better. All right, that's going to do it for our news and notes. Of course, as always, we probably missed some stuff. But like we said, I like to try to keep our news and notes to Fab-oriented news. For moving on, now, since we have Toby here, and Toby plays in a lot of leagues, especially some high leverage leagues, if you will. And so we want to pick, Toby, wanted to pick your brain about your overall Fab strategy. And since we are still in the first month of the season, we're going to try to keep it toward April Fab strategy or early season Fab strategy. So Kevin and I have talked a lot in the early going about our philosophies about being conservative. And I know that word means a little different things to different people, as we talked with Tim McLeod a couple episodes ago, what that means. I think Kevin coined the term conservatively aggressive, new philosophy. And with the amounts that we spend each week, as you can see, at least from our TGFBI bids so far, I've only spent $61. Kevin's only spent $40. It seems as though, looking across your 15-team leagues, that you have a similar philosophy, as you haven't spent more than $114 across your main events and your TGFBI leagues. So let me ask you, like, how would you describe your overall strategy, especially when it comes to early season bids?
Yeah, I think generally my general Fab philosophy, and there's always exceptions, and that includes when you're incredibly desperate for closers, which I am this year, which is throwing a lot of my strategy and just general meaning of life type questions into question, is, yeah, I don't like to have those really high bids. I don't like to throw down $300-$400 on a single player, particularly a reliever, when their value is so tied up with having that role. And so if I feel pretty confident that closer is going to, be in that situation where they have it, then I will, then I'll be willing to do that. Sometimes with position players, you have to get aggressive. And a lot of times, like, what I would prefer to do in an ideal situation is just grind away each week, whether it's just adding guys, maybe before, we talked a little bit about adding guys before they have that two start. So like last week, it was Austin Gomber, for instance. I added him in a couple leagues for under $10. And so doing that instead of kind of having to do it that particular week, really trying to mix and match, even doing terrible things like picking up Brandon Crawford, which it didn't work this week, but he had four games in the first half of the week. And some of my starters at shortstop only had two. And so I was able to plug him in there, though it didn't end up working out. Like, over the course of a season, when you do that, you get a lot more plate appearances and a lot more runs. So, but I think there are players that you need to get aggressive on. And those are the ones where you feel confident that they're going to be good. And generally there's some sort of role change with them, right? So maybe they were batting like at the back of the lineup, and now they're going to bat first or something like that. Or maybe they weren't playing every day, but now they're going to have access to playing time every day for the foreseeable future. And I think one thing to think about too is just when you make a really large bid, is just thinking about the full season and how it's going to play out. So it's like with Dolis, for instance, like we already have the Blue Jays saying that they were already using a closer. Merriweather got the first two shots, but were they just using Romano in the high leverage? Now Romano's coming back. So I'm trying to think, even if I get this guy, do I feel confident they're going to have the gig for the rest of the season if I'm going to spend that type of money? Or on the position player, are we talking about them being in the lineup now every day for a couple weeks or not? Nico Horner is like a perfect example, right? Where it's prospect pedigree comes up. But yeah, he's been fine, I think, like where he's played previously, but he doesn't necessarily provide a ton of power, a ton of speed. He does provide some batting average, but his playing time is a little bit uncertain. And so do you really want to put in a huge bid on somebody like that? Maybe that's a bad example, but I don't like to do the big bids. And I think when you look back at the research, the bids that tend to do the most are like kind of the $40 to $50 range, because I think those are like a really nice medium where you really like the player, but you're not investing 30% of your Fab over the course of 26 weeks into a single player. So I guess that, again, is a long way of saying I am aggressively conservative as well, conservatively aggressive with my Fab bids. But it also depends on the context. Like, I was joking around, and I mentioned this on our podcast, I spent $77 on Brian Garcia last week in a moment of desperation because I had zero saves, right, through 3 weeks. And so each team is going to be different and your approach is going to be different. And I think the key is that was a really, that was something really helpful for me to go through, because afterwards I was just like, that was a bad bid. There's no way that was a good bid. And it was good to have that psychological recognition that this is how I'm feeling about saves and I'm not making good decisions. So I need to be a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit more contemplative, maybe, I don't know, in thinking about what those bids are and where I want to do that. Because those $77 bids, they don't seem like a lot, but they really are. That's almost 2 weeks worth of fab bids. If you have 26 weeks and you divide 1,000 by 26, you're about $40 per fab period. So you just spent two fab periods on a guy who may or may not have access to saves and actually is not a very good pitcher. So you're just hoping he's lucky and hoping he relucks into those saves. So anyways, those are some examples. And you know, that's my general philosophy, which seems to align with what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think the name that rings a bell of what you're talking about is probably Tyler Naquin, who obviously was going for big dollars while Jesse Winker was out and he was on his huge
Tanner
run. Tanner Scott's a good one, at least back on the closer run. And yeah, I look at it personally, using your fab is a lot like using your draft capital to an extent. It's like the more money you spend on a guy is like drafting him a lot earlier, and you're going to be a lot less likely to drop a guy you pick up in the first 10 rounds of a draft, at least in the first half of the season, than you would at the back end of your draft. And same can be said about a $10 bid versus a $110 bid. I don't think there's any exact, I've never put an exact time frame as to, I spend this much amount of money on a guy, I need to have him on my roster for X amount of weeks. But I think that there's probably some correlation, at least mentally, on that. And so I think that goes along with what you're saying. Toby, do you spend any more or less time on your 12 teamers, say your online championships versus like your main event, your 15 teamers? Is there a different strategy you use for those different formats?
Yeah, I spend a lot more time on the 15s than I do on the 12s. With the 15s, part of it is just like with the 15s, you're talking main events versus online championships. And so the investment is greater. And as terrible as it sounds, that would impact how much time I spend on different leagues. That's certainly a part of it. But I also feel like in the 15s, there is a significant advantage that you can get with smaller changes in a player's talent level or by getting a guy, because there's a lot of just blah in the player pool. There's not a lot of guys that you feel really strongly about or really want to have. There's just a lot of similar things. And so when you do have the opportunity to get just that slightest advantage, I think it can be incredibly big in a 15. Whereas in a 12, it's like last week I go into it and I'm like, every single league has Michael Wacha available, Michael Fulmer available, Danny Duffy available. And so I like all of those guys and I like all of them pretty closely. And if I get one of those three, I feel okay. And so I'm not going to do any crazy bids. And it's also so hard in the 12s. There's no even science to like what the bid amounts are almost, right? Like you go into your fab list and you look at what previous weeks has gotten what types of players and you try to figure out like, this is this similar type of player, but the bids are just all out of whack. Like you can get some guys for $1 that you're just like, what on earth is this happening for? You know, and then there's other guys where it's like, why on earth did, yeah, Tyler Naquin, at main events, he went for a really high two, but in 12s, he goes for really high two. You're like, what on earth is happening here? And so I think with them, there's just, to me, it's like the slightest edge in a 15 team is key to be able to capture. Whereas with a 12, again, every edge is an edge. As long as I got one of those three pitchers, I was fine. Whereas in my mains, it was like I had one of my fours, Wacha was available. And in two of my four, Fulmer was available. And Duffy was only available in one. I actually don't think he was available in any. And so those are the types of things where you're just like, you got to know which are these guys that I really want to go after, who is not. Whereas with 12s, it's like line them up at $25 each and hope you get one of those three. And there's just so much more talent on the waiver wire. And you can, with offense, like there's so many better offensive players. Like Evan Longoria is still on my waiver wire in 12s. Joey Votto is still on my waiver wire in 12s. Avisail Garcia I picked up last year, you know, or last week, who, you know, was still there. Brian Anderson's on a bunch of them. It's just, he's not a good example, but I love Brian Anderson. So I just think that 15s is just, you just are super hyper focused on trying to get that little edge and figuring out what is that exact number and what makes the most sense. Whereas with the 12s, I'm just kind of, let's get this list together and I'll be okay.
Yeah, it seems as though because you have all those options as well, you can actually spend less money per week. Where if you've got three or four guys, like you mentioned, you don't like one over the other that much. And Kevin, you've talked about this in previous episodes, that you're able to just bring down your bid from, let's just say if there was only one of those guys available, you might throw an $80 bid at them. But now that you have three or four options, you can bring that all the way down to like maybe even a $20, $25 bid on all of them and just put them in the order in which you prefer and just be happy with whatever you get and save yourself $60. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Totally.
We had a question too, Toby, from our PL Discord. We were looking when we told everybody that we were going to have you on. They wanted you to give some tips on how you manage your fab, especially this season. As we were talking off air before, you remind us how many fab leagues you are in this year compared to what you've done in the past, and how you are managing that, I don't know, level of stress, if you will, in the change.
Yeah, I'm in 12 fab leagues this year. Actually, in 2019, I was in 10.
Are they all on NFBC or are they?
Most of them are. I have two that are on Fantrax, unfortunately. I just love the NFBC interface. And I love like the fact that I can create one list of bid, like one player list, and just copy it and then change who the dropped player is and then mix them around afterwards. Like, it's just a lot more user friendly. But anyways, yeah, it's been a lot. I really struggle with finding the right balance because I spend a lot of time on the fab, just like on Saturday nights. Like normally I'll start at 10 and I'll stop at 2:30 or 3 in the morning. And I was just joking with you guys before. I'm actually can feel it like all week long now, like where I'm very tired. And then on Sundays, I don't know, it doesn't feel like it used to be like this, but it's just Sunday feels like a whole new, you're like, you do everything on Saturday and then everything happens on Sunday. You're just like trying to go through it and I'm going through 10 different leagues to do that and try to remember. Okay. And I also have a Google spreadsheet. I got this idea from Scott Jenstad, although he does it handwritten, but now that I have 10 leagues, I have it on a Google spreadsheet and I have all my teams listed and first half of the week, second half of the week, which starters I'm going to start. And then I color code them based on whether they're in for each part of the week. And then it helps me identify where I have gaps in my lineup or which players I'm going to drop. But then when everything hits on Sunday, then I've got to remember this is this week and I need this. And that's why that guy was more expensive than this guy. Even though I really want to bump up this guy, I actually don't need him in that league. And so just trying to figure out those things because I really have to trust what I did on Saturday night. And so it is exhausting. It's not, I'm not like, it's not a woe is me, right? Like I love fantasy baseball and I'm doing this and I'm very fortunate to do this, especially with some of the NFBC leagues and the price points and things like that. So, it's a lot. And I feel like fab over the last two seasons with COVID and just the way that the game is changing, you just have to be hyper conscious of everything. And it's hard to stay on top of it all and manage it. But then at the same time, I'm like, okay, next year, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do fewer leagues. And then it's, which ones am I going to cut out? Like, I love them all, right? So it's hard to think about which ones that I would have to happen. But those are decisions I'll have to make at some point in time. But hopefully it's sustainable over 26 weeks. I'm certainly hopeful of that. But it really is. It's demanding. And so this is just like all a really big excuse for if I ever make mistakes in fab.
There it is.
You know, people are like, Warner, did you bid $77 for Brian Garcia? I'm just like, I'm tired. All right. Leave me alone.
Toby, at least you didn't. And this was me last week. I only have 7. Fab leagues
still,
but when I was going through things on Sunday and moved a couple of things around, I ended up not realizing that my only shortstop on a team was Bobby Witt Jr. I dropped my only starting shortstop, and the only reason I noticed it before Monday when I went to set the lineup was because I didn't get a player that I bid on. It said that would have given me an illegal roster, and I was like, how is this gonna be illegal? I realized that I had moved the bid dropping Elvis Andrews in front of the one where I was dropping Bobby Witt Jr. Just, it's crazy.
Yeah, oh for sure. Yeah, those things are bound to happen. So yeah, it's a lot. We love the grind.
It's nice that you have pretty much all of your leagues into one spot in the NFBC. Like you said, you have a couple on Fantrax as well. It's when you start spreading them out. Kevin and I have, we share a team through the Pitcherless Podcast Network, and that's on Yahoo. And I have a bunch of teams on Yahoo as well in conjunction with NFBC and a couple on Fantrax as well. And I definitely forget to do fab on at least one team per week just because of the three different formats that they're on. Not to mention that the league I just mentioned, Kevin and I, we just moved the fab to Saturday nights instead of Sunday nights. And so by the time Sunday rolls around and I'm going around trying to figure out my fab, oh yeah, that's right, it's too late. We didn't bid on anybody last week.
By the way, sounds like you guys could use a Google spreadsheet. Yeah.
Exactly.
With one tab per team, so you make sure you go all the way through.
I do have several weekly alarms on my phone. So don't forget.
Yeah, but those are just reminders to check fab and see what happens.
All right, great. That's all great stuff, Toby. Thanks so much for letting us pick your brain on that. We're going to get right. Let's get into our recommendations for the week. As we typically will do, we will break it out by categories that you might need for your rosters. And this early in the season, the categories might not mean that much to you, but they a lot more later on in the season as you're trying to figure out the best way you can jump in the standings by jumping up just like two or three stolen bases rather than worrying about RBIs or, you know, some other combination. But we're now, we're going to continue to do that all season long. We start off with the power department, home runs, RBIs coming up. Kevin, who do you notice off the bat that might be of interest in that category?
Yeah, this has a lot to do with the schedule for the next couple of weeks. I mentioned 15 teams have 7 games this week. 6 of them also have 7 games the following week. So guys on the large side of a platoon can potentially get a lot of playing time over the next couple of weeks. Mitch Moreland in Oakland, everyday DH. I shouldn't say everyday DH. I just said large side of platoon and then said every day. But large side of the platoon as a designated hitter, he does typically pinch hit at some point in the game on the days he doesn't start. And he's starting to come around this week with a couple of home runs. I believe it was Wednesday. So he's using TGFBI as a reference for 15-team leagues. He was available in, I believe, 15%, and he's only rostered in 15%, and he's only rostered in 2% of Yahoo leagues. So for more shallow leagues, he's definitely available and should get a lot of playing time over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, he started today against the lefty as well. So maybe not as much of a platoon as you might be worried about with Moreland. Toby, you noticed anybody on the wire worth looking at if you're looking for some added power this coming week?
Yeah, on the kind of week-to-week basis, I think Moreland's a good shout, just being cognizant of like how many games they're going to get because of the lefty-righty splits. I know Daniel Vogelbach's been getting a little bit more play, and with Hira struggling, there's the possibility of he's just been so bad. There's been some conversations about him being demoted, but that remains to be seen, but he might be just a speculative guy to add. I know they've got a couple lefties at least this week, so he may not be as interesting for this particular week, but he's a guy we know has the power. We know that Milwaukee is a great park for hitters, and that's like primarily talking 15-teamer as well. I know that Jordan Luplow is available in some places. I don't think he was in the lineup today against the Yankees because there was a right-hander, but he's been getting more playing time in general for Cleveland. And he's actually looked pretty good. When you look at the underlying skills, the contact rate is decent. All the quality of contact metrics are pretty good for him as well. So I think he's another guy who's pretty good. Jose Marmolejos. Again, all of these guys come with huge like batting average asterisks. But you know, then there's other guys we may not think of as traditionally like power guys. Wilmer Flores, who we talked about before, it looks like he's available in 49% of TGFBI leagues. Josh Rojas is somebody who's heating up a little bit. I know he was given up for dead. He's got a home run, and we know that he has, just from a barrel standpoint and max exit velo and stuff like that, that he's got some power in that bat. You know, if you search like just based on home runs, you're not going to get a lot of guys with a bunch of home runs. So you really have to be looking at some of those underlying skills and thinking back to previous seasons about what you're looking for from a power perspective. Those are some of the guys that kind of jump out at me for kind of 15 teamers and some 12 teamers, I think. those are some of the guys that I would maybe look at.
I like the Vogelbach call out. I think he was getting a little bit more run, obviously, when Colton Wong was on the IL and Kesson Hira moved over to second base for a couple of games as well. So obviously with Wong back, Hira's solidified at first. But when Vogelbach was playing, at least in the last week, he was batting second in that lineup as well. So that's something to monitor if he were to get a couple straight games run, especially with in a week where he has a lot of games, even with the platoon, that he can still throw, even if he plays three games a week, he can still add a home run to your totals in Milwaukee, especially if the games are in Milwaukee.
And that's a good shout. And that's we're recording this before I do all my fab on late on Saturday night. So hopefully those are the types of things that I pick up on later on. So thank you for that, Adam. You've contributed already to my fabbing.
I'm glad I'm not in any leagues with you.
And Adam, I know you have this guy listed under speed as well, but he's got 5 home runs in a couple of weeks. So Adolis Garcia, you brought him up a couple of weeks ago, and I wasn't really interested, but now it's hard to ignore. And a decent batting average going along with that. He's only rostered in 29% TGFBI and 4% on Yahoo. I think he's going to be the expensive guy this week. I was fortunate enough that even though I wasn't interested when we talked about him, or when you talked about him, you were the only one that really brought him up a couple of weeks ago. I was pretty desperate for an outfielder in one of my dynasty leagues, and he was available. So I thank you, because he's paying dividends already.
Yeah, I think we talked about him a little bit with Shelley last week as well. He's playing every day, obviously in Texas, killing the ball. He has run twice, but he's been caught both times. He has a history of stealing bases in the minors as well. So he has a power speed combo. Texas has been proven to be a team that has intent, as they've shown in spring training, as they've shown in the last couple of years, at least when it comes to, I think they've been in the top 5 stolen bases in the league the last 2 or 3 years as well. So he's played all 3 outfield positions as well, just in the last week. But so they move around, and he played any DH. So they're finding ways to keep his bat in the lineup, regardless of what's going on in Texas. So yeah, I agree. I think he's going to be the big spender in a lot of leagues this year, at least when it comes to bats. Toby, have you looked into Garcia at all? Do you have any interest?
Yeah, I had a little bit of interest. I didn't pick him up anywhere last week because I was busy speculating on closers. I'm somebody who looks at projections. And so if you look at Adolis Garcia's projections, like they give him like 15 home runs and 5 stolen bases or something like that and 400 plate appearances. So you're talking about somebody who could go 2010-ish. I think there's major strikeout concerns. And the challenge with guys like this is it's like the Naquin thing. And Naquin's maybe a bad example, but you don't get the stats that they got the past week. And so I like to focus in on the skill and try to look at something that may appear to be a little bit more sustainable, like ride while it's hot. And the key is not spending a lot on those guys because they can really hurt you if you pay for what they have done instead of what they're going to do. One guy who's jumping out is Billy McKinney on the Brewers. Wrong Brewer. I said Daniel Vogelbach. I should have said McKinney, but especially with Yelich, it sounds like he's not doing great. It sounds like they said he hit a plateau, whatever that means, in his recovery. And so he's going back to get an MRI, which is not great, obviously. But McKinney has 21 home runs and 472 plate appearances in the big leagues. So he's a guy who can hit for some power. And he's in a great lineup, or not in a great lineup, but he's in a great situation with the Brewers, should have access to playing time, should bat in a decent spot in that lineup just because they're bereft of talent and plays in a great park. So he's a guy that should be beneficial as well. And I haven't looked as much into him, but Taylor on the Brewers also interests me, not necessarily from a power perspective, but if I remember him from last year, he's got a little bit of speed too, a little bit of speed, a little bit of pop. The Brewers might be a good situation to try to figure out and speculate on who might get the playing time while they've got some holes in that lineup.
Yeah, Tyrone Taylor started in right field, batted third earlier today, Saturday, as we're recording this. McKinney's kind of bounced all over the lineup, mostly in the 6 or 7 spot. He did bat second on Friday and fifth today. So they're moving them all around over in Milwaukee. So a couple guys to keep an eye on for sure. But it is nice to have, like we talked about earlier, it's nice to have these options so that if you find, if you feel as though they are all equal, that you can throw a similar bid on all of them and just be happy with whoever you get rather than going after the big name. I think Garcia is going to be similar to, you equated him to Naquin, where you're not going to get his stats. He's already done, but I think it's more of a situation like Akil Baddoo, where he's just, he's finding his way into the lineup every day. There's not really, in Naquin's case, he was obviously filling in for Jesse Winker, who once he came back, Naquin either got bumped down the lineup or didn't play at all. I don't really see anybody fighting Garcia for a spot in Texas, at least not right now, until he cools off per se. So I do think
he's,
that
he's the best hitter they have.
Exactly.
Just kidding, Nick Solak. Nick Solak.
Give the Nick Solak love. Yes. Yeah. All right. As Kevin mentioned, yeah, I did mention, I did put Garcia on the next section, the speed guys. He doesn't have a ton of speed, but he has a really good, Texas has some good matchups coming up when it comes to at least the catchers that they're playing. Kurt Suzuki of the Angels and Christian Vasquez haven't been doing very well this year. Kurt Suzuki has a long-standing history of not throwing out runners. Christian Vasquez does, though. He's usually pretty good at it. He's just not this year. Those two have combined to only catch two of the 15 runners that have run against them this year. I really wanted to recommend Leodis Taveras. He's just not starting anymore at all. He's not playing. So I can't, in good faith, put him on the list. So Garcia, obviously with Garcia for a speed option, he's not going to hurt you anywhere else, at least not the way he's been playing as well. So still available in plenty of 15-teamers, definitely available in your 12-teamers, if nothing else, is just a flyer. And then a couple other guys that have some really good matchups coming up next week as far as speed guys go. Miles Straw, obviously just a 12-team. He was drafted everywhere in 15-teamers. He hasn't really been dropped. He's 100% rostered in TGFBI, for example, but still available in plenty of 12-teamers out there. He has some really good matchups coming up next week. The Royals have some good matchups as well. So Nicky Lopez is an option, believe it or not. Kevin, do you know why Nicky Lopez is hitting as well as he is lately, or is it just a cloud of smoke?
He hit really well in the minor leagues. A couple of years ago, Royals fans were going crazy. Why isn't Nicky Lopez being called up? And when he did come up, he didn't hit. And so when he did get on base, which was rarely, he didn't attempt to run. I think they had him so concentrating on fixing whatever was wrong at the plate that they didn't have him running when he did actually get on base. Since he is hitting, I know he does have at least one stolen base this past week. And if he continues to get on base, he had double digit stolen base numbers repeatedly in the minor leagues. So I like that call.
Yeah. Lopez he's fast. He's a fast kid. He's a 86th percentile sprint speed, but more importantly, his 4.22 second to home, or home to first speed ranks him seventh overall in baseball this year. He definitely can get out of the box pretty quickly. Kansas City faces Pittsburgh and Minnesota with a start game or a Monday game against Detroit as well. So Wilson Ramos catching for Detroit, Jacob Stallings in Pittsburgh, and Mitch Garver have also not done very well throwing out runners so far to start this year. Jacob Stallings leads the league in stolen bases allowed with 13 on the season so far. Could be some opportunity for the Royals, who, again, are another team who love to run. Everybody thought Matheny might not be a manager who likes to run, but with the roster that he's been given from the get-go, you got to use what you're given, if you will, and the talent to run around the bases was definitely there. Hunter Dozier also stands out as a possibility for speed. And as our boy Yancy Yeaton pointed out, he just gained third base eligibility as well. He's not available in a lot of 15-teamers, but a 12-team add there, an option as well there.
To a point that you like to make often, Adam, I'm keeping an eye on the drop list from this weekend. Dozier's hitting the ball hard, but he's hitting 125. So some people are going to let him go. And I'd keep an eye on it if you have a spot to wait until he gets it put together.
Yeah, and then Toby mentioned, and I'll echo, John Birdie is always an option where he's available, especially with the playing time. He is 88% rostered in TGFBI, so there's a couple leagues out there where he's available. I'm sure he'll be picked up based on the playing time changes. 20% rostered in Yahoo leagues. And then Yancey wanted us to talk about Sam Haggerty, who has stolen a couple bases in his limited time playing. And I'm a big Haggerty fan in general, especially when he can get on those spurts. He stole a base the other day as a pinch. He was a pinch runner, stole a base, and then had the go-ahead RBI, if I'm not mistaken, later in that game. So not a lot of, he started the last two games, but I don't see him getting into that lineup. Toby, do you see anything about Haggerty that should push him into the Seattle lineup more often?
Not necessarily. I think the challenge with a guy like Haggerty is you generally are just getting him for that speed. And I think this early on in the season, I'm very hesitant to just go after guys just to stream the stolen bases. I'd much rather do that towards the back end of the year where I've got know where I'm at with my runs and my RBI and my home runs, things of that nature. But Haggerty, like from a stolen base perspective, in his major league career, he's got 6 and 89 plate appearances. He's got a pretty good eye, so he gets on base. You know, he has been hitting at the back end of that lineup. They've got my boy JP Crawford like at the back end of that lineup, but he's been hitting right in front of him when he does play. So I'm not sure if he's a guy like there are worse speculative ads. If he gets a run of playing time, he could definitely cobble together 5 stolen bases in a couple weeks. And they've got 7 games next week, including against Houston, who typically hasn't been that good at holding runners, although I can check. Maybe they're doing much better this year. So it's also small samples. But
I was disappointed when I saw his number of plate appearances. I thought when I pulled up the game log, I was going to what I saw better. But it's completely spread out. He's started 3 games a week all season, each and every week, but never more than 3. It's really tough for a guy like that.
Yeah, he had a nice little stretch last year, I think, where he started 2 straight weeks and he just went on a tear. He's one of the most added players, at least in shallow leagues. And that was fun for that time period, but you're not cracking the lineup every day in Seattle yet. I think it's going to take a couple more injuries to get him in there every day. He does have some flexibility. He plays second base, played outfield. So they can put him in a couple different places if they really want to, though. And then somebody that Kevin pointed out, Tim LoCastro, should make his way back next week. Kevin, is that right?
Yeah, I saw that within a day or two when he's eligible. So that'd be midweek. And I was surprised to see him available even in a couple of 15-team leagues. He's 88% rostered TGFBI. I'm certain he was universally rostered. So he was dropped in a couple spots. So worth just taking a look, see if he's out there.
Yeah, he was dropped in 4 TGFBI leagues last week once he hit the IL. He was one of my speed streamers last week. And literally an hour after my article went live, he broke his finger getting caught for the first time in his career. So that went good.
Yeah, I don't see any reason he doesn't go right back into the leadoff spot when he comes back. So definitely worth checking if he's available.
Yeah, no updates on Ketel Marte from what I can tell as well. So he should get close to, if not everyday playing time once he's back as well. All right, we'll move on to our opportunity column. These are guys that either have a 7-game week coming up or just have really good matchups, or they're walking into more opportunity due to injury, maybe like an Andrew Stevenson in Washington with Juan Soto going down and stuff like that. Kevin, anybody in this category worth mentioning?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that there's 6 teams that have back-to-back 7-game weeks. So I was looking pretty closely at those teams, just seeing if there was anybody available that might get extra plate appearances that would be beneficial. And we talked about a couple of them. Mitch Moreland, we talked about. Adolis Garcia, we talked about. One other guy that I am interested in is Francisco Mejia is starting to hit like we were expecting 3 years ago. This is a high pedigree guy. The Cleveland was trying him at third base just to be able to get his bat into the lineup back before they shipped him off to San Diego. And then in Tampa, the concern is that Mike Zunino is a favorable defensive catcher and Tampa likes him. I watched 3 Tampa games this week. They just happened to be playing the Royals. Zunino didn't look good to me defensively in the game I watched. And I had a flashback watching that. Back to the World Series And the whole Blake Snell being pulled fiasco with Mookie Betts coming to the plate. And the thing that nobody talked about at that time was the move should have worked. Anderson put a ball in the dirt that should have been blocked by Zunino, and he didn't. Or Austin Barnes would have still been on third base rather than Mookie Betts when the ground ball was hit to first base. None of that should have ever happened. They should have been out of the inning. And now Mike Zunino did the same thing against Kansas City the other day. They have pretty much evenly split the plate appearances in Tampa so far this season. But if Zunino is not going to be good defensively and Mejia is hitting like we expected him to as he was coming up through the minors, then Mejia is going to start taking over more and more playing time. And even at half the playing time for a catcher, when you have 14 games over the next 2 weeks, he's somebody I'd like to have in my lineup. 83% rostered in TGFBI, obviously 15 team and two catcher league, but he's only 2% rostered on Yahoo. And if he starts playing, I could see playing him in more shallow leagues, even one catcher leagues.
Yeah, Zunino also, I know it's a smaller part of the game, but he's allowed 11 stolen bases in his time behind the plate and has yet to throw out any would-be base stealers as well. So he has that history as well of pretty much not caring about base runners or at least not doing much about it. So on the defensive side, so if that's any indication, that's something to look into as well. Toby, do you see anybody in this category, the opportunity column, where guys who have really good matchups coming up, a lot of games coming up and what have you?
Yeah, so I think the six teams that you guys mentioned that have 14 games straight coming up are the Brewers, the Phillies, the Rangers, the Rays, the A's, and the Cardinals. And so with the Cardinals, Tyler O'Neill is coming. He just came back off the IL. He was in the lineup today. He may have been in the lineup Friday as well. But he's a guy I know a lot of people had high hopes for him, brings the power speed combo, was supposed to get everyday playing time heading into the season. So hopefully if they go back to that, I know none of the other outfielders have really stood out. So he could be a guy, he's available in 39% of TGFBI leagues, I believe. So that's one guy who stands out. Mike Brousseau of the Rays has been hitting well. He had a two-run homer today off Robbie Ray, which was incredibly disappointing as somebody who has Robbie Ray in a lot of places. But he's got multi-position eligibility, first, shortstop, and third base, I believe, maybe even second in there. And I have not been paying that much attention yet to what his playing time has looked like, but I know he's been playing against some righties. I've seen that on Twitter. And so that's one guy. And then I know somebody who's on your list who's a huge, who I've been a big fan of for a couple of years, is Brad Miller on the Phillies, although he has not played yet. He was scratched yesterday, which was really sad because every other game had started by the time he was scratched. And so you couldn't replace him in lineups. Or by the time that I figured it out, I was at a Little League game at the time. And he's somebody to monitor. And then we talked about a bunch about different guys on the Brewers, Taylor McKinney, Vogelbach, less, but there's some options there. So those are some of the guys that are jumping out at me a little bit from the teams that have increased opportunity over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, like the Mike Brousseau call out, he was one of the highest picked up players last week in the main event, being picked up by 25 different teams. That positional flexibility obviously plays a big part in there. He was a really low bid, only averaged $13 for his services in the main. I'm sure he's still out there in a couple of leagues, but that's more than half of the leagues out there have picked him up last week. I like the Tyler O'Neill one as well, especially if he doesn't really do anything tomorrow to like remind everybody that he did come back from the IL. I agree. I don't think Justin Williams is going to stop him from taking back over left field. He didn't start on Friday, but he did bat sixth today on Saturday playing left field for the Cardinals. All right, we'll move on to our pitchers, wins and Ks, two start guys that are worth taking a look at, guys who might vulture a win as a follower, perhaps, like a Ryan Yarbrough type of guy. Kevin, is there anybody that pitchers stand out to you going into this week that might still be available?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys I'm interested in this week, at least. One of them, Toby mentioned earlier that he grabbed him last week. That's a great move, Austin Gomber, because at San Francisco and at Arizona, that's a nice two spots for the week. Jeff Zimmerman did tweet out today that he does have the worst walks per nine rate amongst qualified starters in baseball. And I looked at it, and it's over one full walk per nine worse than the second worst. So that is something to keep an eye on. A bit of a concern, but really anybody pretty much going to San Francisco and Arizona. One I really like, and this kind of piggybacks off of our Desclafani pick from last week. He gets Colorado in their first road game after a homestand, which is ideal. Alex Wood, though, gets them on Wednesday. He's only 44% owned in TGFBI, 24% on Yahoo. So he's available in three-fourths of Yahoo leagues out there. What's interesting with him is I would love to use him this week, skip a week, because I believe he's at Colorado and against San Diego. But then he'll line up with Pittsburgh in 3 weeks. So a nice guy for two of the next 3 weeks, really nice matchups for Alex Wood if he's available for you.
Yeah, he's on our list of guys looking ahead who might have two starts the following week, like you said, at Colorado and hosting San Diego. You hate to sit, I think I agree with you on that. You hate to sit a guy with two starts almost regardless, but with Alex Wood, he's not exactly Jacob DeGrom, and going into Colorado is going to scare you no matter what's going on. And San Diego obviously is no joke as well. Good call outs there, Toby. Any starters that you got your eye on that might still be available that weren't picked up like a week early?
But one thing I'll say about Gomber is just doing a little research. I did pick him up, but I'm also super hesitant to start him just because I don't love what I see, like what Kevin mentioned about the walk rate and stuff. But looking under the hood a little bit, one of the things I like to do early on in a season is just see whether the underlying skills support something. So with the example of Gomber, for instance, the stat that correlates the most with walk rate is percent of pitches that are balls. And Gomber is middle of the pack. He's at 36.3%, which is right around the league average. When you look at like his other kind of fundamentals that go into control and walks, he's got a very high first pitch strike rate at 70.1%. He's in the zone around league average at 43.3%. And then his O swing is 27.5%, which is lower than league average, but not nearly like at the point where you'd be super concerned. So I think there might be a little small sample noise in that. I know that he's never really been super good at control, but his career walk rate, yeah, 11.5%. And that includes this year, which again, he's got 125 total innings. So maybe skewed a little bit. Yeah, so that's just to say, but he also is like a 160 BABIP. And you're just like, oh, great. Am I going to get that regression game coming up? Which is really nice. So in terms of two starts, like not really, there aren't really a lot of great ones, honestly, of players that are going to be available. And I think this year I'm trying to focus a little less on those two starts. Just because I think we, looking at the research, like they oftentimes don't end up good. They don't turn out well because it's so hard to pitch for pitchers to get wins these days, especially ones that aren't that good, that you're relying on them pitching well, pitching enough innings, the bullpen holding on, all of that jazz. And so I'm a little less focused on that. One guy, though, that I would want to highlight is Spencer Turnbull. He's a guy I picked up a bunch last week. He's got the two-step with Kansas City and then at New York against the Yankees, which is tough. But he looked pretty good in his first start. And so that's like a Jekyll and Hyde one. Because no offense, Kevin, to your KC people, but that's a nice matchup. So yeah, so that's one guy who I think he might be a little of interest. Like I'd rather start Turnbull than start Gomber, probably. Even though he's got the Yankees, Turnbull's been a decent enough pitcher. I think he's like a guy you keep in 15 teamers and have on your team the whole season. And he's shown signs of being able to be better than he has been in the past. So that's one guy maybe who kind of jumps out a little bit of the two-start starters who I would probably consider and will be starting probably in most of, if not all of the places that I have him next week.
All right, we'll jump ahead on the show notes, sticking this category about two starts. We're talking a lot about two starters. And as I mentioned in my waiver watcher article, especially in the main, and we were talking about this before we started recording, Toby, in the main event, a lot of the guys who were picked up at, say, TGFBI for their two starts this week were already gone. And so it pays to look ahead and get those guys a lot cheaper. So, for example, Joe Ross was picked up in 18 of the 43 main event leagues this last week, but he was picked up in the same 18 leagues the year before or the week before for half the cost or more than half the cost. Kyle Gibson, same thing. Danny Duffy, Jacob Junis all fit the bill. Junis was only available to be picked up in 6 of the 43 leagues in the main event because he was picked up in 35 leagues the week prior for, again, just about half the cost of what he went for in the week he was going to have a two-start week. So I put together a list of guys that tentatively, now that's the thing about this is obviously injuries happen, rotations change, people get, especially early in the season, they can get skipped pretty easily if they're not performing. So this is all very tentative and that's why they're a little cheaper. That's why you're taking the risk just like any other stash for the most part. But rather than go through this entire list with you guys, Kevin, why don't I start with you? Is what name on this list stands out or names stand out as somebody besides Alex Wood, who we just talked about?
Yeah, I definitely don't like his matchups, as we said. I do J.A. Hatt, the very next guy you have on the list there. Cleveland has not been very good this season. Last couple of days, taking out the Cole versus Bieber game today, of course, but they have shown some flashes. But overall, they're not hitting well at all for this week. And then the two-start week against the Rangers and at Detroit, that's about as good as it gets. J.A. Happ looks very enticing.
Toby, anybody else on the list that kind of stands out at all?
Not really.
So either that's why I grabbed him.
Yeah. I mean, Nick Pivetta, potentially. He's got Detroit and then at Baltimore. At Baltimore is not great, but Pivetta's been pretty good and obviously has the support of one of the better offenses so far in the league. So he would be probably the one that would be of most interest. But again, like, he's another guy who's skating on thin ice and is due that kind of blow up game. One pitcher that I do like who's on here, I don't know if he's going to get two starts though, because they have a 7-man rotation, is Justin Dunn in deeper leagues. His velocity is up. It actually wasn't up his last start, but throughout spring training it was. And he pitched pretty well against Boston this week. He had a really good game last week. He's got another tough matchup this upcoming week. I think the next 2 weeks, actually. So the matchups are tough, but he's showing enough, I think, skill to warrant taking a look at. He actually goes up against Baltimore next week. And it's likely going to be, likely won't get a two-start week, but he's at least interesting to me from a pitching perspective as somebody that you could probably snag for a couple bucks this week just to see how he does against Houston in another bad matchup, see if he can continue to not walk like a ton of guys. But I think he could be interesting.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he should, probably shouldn't have been on this list for that reason, but it was intriguing. If they had a 5-man rotation, he'd be getting for Baltimore. Sure. And at Texas. So if he doesn't get Baltimore, he'll at least get Texas the following week as well. A couple of the other guys just that are on the list, Taylor Widener gets at Miami and at the Mets for Arizona. If he stays in that rotation spot for the Diamondbacks, Adbert Alzale, who pitched pretty well today, was one out away from going the full 5 innings, would get.
Yeah, I was talking to a Cubs fan as that happened. He was irate.
I streamed him today in one of my leagues and in my daily move league, and pretty happy when I turned, you know, I checked the stat line at 4 innings and then I checked it an hour later and saw he only went 4.2. I'm like, I'll take the rest of it though. He would get the Dodgers, but he would also get Pittsburgh if he sticks in that rotation and they don't play more games with him, sending him back down.
And one guy who actually is on that list, who's got the best skills of anybody on that list right now, is Tyler Anderson. They're not great matchups, and I would not recommend the at San Diego is a little tough. But San Diego is tough for sure, but they're not necessarily hitting like they were last year. And they've got some, I don't know if they're holes in the lineup, but they're maybe not as scary as last year. and for lefties, maybe neutralize a little bit. But he's actually, from a skills perspective, has been really good. He's got a 14.5% swinging strike rate through 20 and two-thirds innings, 17.2% K-minus walk rate. He's got a high whip at 135, but that's because he has a 333 BABIP. He's only got a 6.9% walk rate. He's generating a 36% O-swing, 71.4% in-zone contact. So again, it's still Tyler Anderson. It is still Tyler Anderson, but the skills are very good. And so even if it's just for KC next week, it might be worth adding him in deeper leagues just to see if he can keep it up.
Nice. So if you can get ahead of that, obviously you can save yourself some fab, and that adds up quickly throughout the course of the year. So definitely keep an eye on schedules when you're considering these bids. And if you miss out on this week's two starter, you can bid half the price and get somebody for the following week, perhaps in your league. All right, move to everybody's favorite category, and that's saves. I noticed that nobody put any notes in here, so I threw some, maybe just because nobody wants to talk about it. So I just wanted to mention that, obviously, Raisel Iglesias has looked terrible for the Angels so far. And I would have liked to have said Chris Rodriguez is a good flyer here, but Joe Maddon just came out and said that he sees Rodriguez as a future frontline starter, which obviously is what he came up through the minors as, and I think there's a lot of expectation that he would move into at least compete for a rotation spot in 2022, as long as he stays stretched out as a long reliever this year. I like Mike Myers he's as good of a flyer as any as when it comes to these closer situations. He was great at the end of last year. He's been great all except for one outing this year as well. He's 24% rostered in TGFBI, plenty of opportunity in 12 teamers as well. And so he's as good of a flyer as any. Iglesias has had these moments too, though, where he's been really bad for stretches, then all of a sudden he just comes back and he's just an all-star for 5 weeks. So you never know. And if they have they traded for the guy, I think that they probably have every intention of forcing him back into that situation, into the closed situation. But if he keeps struggling, they're not going to have any choice, especially since every other team is making changes on the whim. As well, what do you guys think of Mayers, and I guess even more, what are your thoughts on Iglesias sticking in that role for the Angels?
I think Iglesias is phenomenal. I know he's sucked so far this year, but check this out. Swinging strike rate, 23%. K-minus walk rate, 31.3%. O-swing, so chase rate, 39.1%. He's walked 3.1% of batters. He's struck out 34% of batters. He's got a 14 K per nine and a 129 walks per nine. He just has a 412 BABIP and a 366 strand rate and a 2.57 home runs per nine. So if I were in a fantasy league that allowed trading, I'd be targeting Iglesias and going after him and trying to acquire him, because these things should not continue to happen to him. He's too good of a pitcher for that to have happen. We've seen it like with Edwin Diaz and stuff like that, where maybe it happens over the course of a full season, but it's really never happened to Iglesias. He's never struggled over the course of a full season like this before. So I actually think that in a trading league, I would target him. That said, Myers pitched really well towards the back end of last year. I know a lot of people in early draft champions were picking him up. He's pitched fine. Everything's fine with him, but Iglesias is dominant. So I would stick with Iglesias, and hopefully I shouldn't say hopefully because I don't have him in any of my leagues, but hopefully your patience with him is restored, or is, what is it called? Repaid with some great performances down the stretch. Cause I think he's actually been lights out for me from just a skills perspective.
Yeah. I agree with both of you. Toby alluded to this at the end. I might take a flyer on Myers where available, just for the fact that we don't know what the Angels are going to do. I agree with Toby 100% in trading leagues. I'd be looking to see if the Iglesias manager is frustrated enough to let him go, but just not knowing what the Angels will do, I may grab Myers as well. Yeah, I'm on the fence. Not really on the fence. I just agree with what both of you said.
Yeah, and I should have said, I think Iglesias is really good, but Kevin, to your point, and Adam, to yours, like, that doesn't mean he's going to stay in the role. If he continues to do what he's done, he'll lose the role. So
that's why a good speculative. So every week this part. We have no idea what they're going to do. Yeah. We think we know what they should do.
And then when they do what we think they should have done all the whole time, like put the best guy in the highest leverage spot,
right,
we get pissed off.
Stop, you know, listening, right, to us.
Exactly. 100%.
All right. I'll go back to you, Toby. Is there any other, because you are so desperate for saves, is there any other situations that you're at least monitoring for this weekend?
Yeah, I think Tampa's always interesting, not for a set closer, but just because they have so many good arms in that bullpen. I know, obviously, Castillo was out because of side effects from the vaccine, but they've got some really good arms. Jeffrey Springs, who they got from Boston, has been really good this year. His ERA is higher than the skills say it should be, but he got a save opportunity and got a save at the end of last week. Whether or not he's next person up with Castillo, I don't think that's the case, but if you're looking for a high-skilled reliever who will probably get a little bit of run this week and maybe lucks into a save or so, it could be him. Fairbanks is also coming back, it sounds like, from the IL, and he could be another guy that you speculate on, as could Andrew Kittredge, who has been really good.
He actually got their save tonight.
Oh, Kittredge got their save tonight?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I love Kittredge. Great. So now he's going to go. Yeah, he's the opener sometimes, closer sometimes. So Kittredge is another one. Some other specs, Daniel Hudson. Obviously, Brad Hand has that job totally secure, but Hudson's actually looked really good this year. So if an injury happens or Hand reverts back to how he's looked in previous seasons, that could be one. I know with the Twins, like Hansel Robles, it's ironic. Hansel Robles has given up 5 earned runs this year. All 5 of them have been given up with Taylor Rogers on the mound, but they were his inherited runners. So what I think is happening is Taylor Rogers is intentionally undermining Hansel Robles' attack at the closer spot. But he's been a guy that I've been specking on. Obviously, Lucas Sims should be owned on the Reds, but he struggled in his last outing. I do have a fair amount of Sean Doolittle on the Reds just because Garrett really looks bad. Doolittle looked bad in his last outing, but he, from a skills perspective, has been pretty good. And so if Garrett's gone and he's the lefty answer, maybe Doolittle lucks himself into some saves or Sims pitches his way out of them. Yeah, those are some of the guys. I think those are the major ones. We covered Staumont and Barlow. Even though Barlow doesn't have access to the saves right now, for me, the way KC has handled it, and Kevin, you know better than me, but they've been spreading it around. So maybe you'll luck into it. And I think he's probably the best reliever in that bullpen. And he also pitches a decent number of innings. And so just from a pure helping you out perspective, he could potentially do that here. And then Chris Martin is available in some leagues. He's coming back from the IL. Snitker has said that he was a high leverage guy before he got injured. And all of the relievers in that bullpen have been pretty bad recently. So he's another guy. So those are the major ones. And then JB Bukauskas on the Diamondbacks. I know Crichton got the last save and then he blew it, but he only gave up inherited runners as well. But Bukauskas has looked decent, I think, since coming on. And I know Greg Jewett, who does the closer chart, is a really big fan of his. So he's another guy who maybe just by process of elimination gets access to saves. Although I'm always hesitant that they'll put rookies or younger guys in those situations just because of contract stuff.
Yeah, he's been used in early in games, at least to the start of the season. He's been coming in the 5th or 6th inning before the rest of the bullpen takes a high leverage spot. But I agree. I'm a fan. I'm Bukauskas' fan as well. Obviously, the pedigree is there and the talent level is there. He could still be a starter someday, but I think this year he is pretty much entrenched in that bullpen. And who else is going to stand up in the Arizona
bullpen? They're all so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the one that's wide open, we talked about it earlier, Kevin, is the Kansas City bullpen as well. I think that's one that is worth monitoring pretty heavily. But it looks like Holland still probably has the next shot, Kevin. At least that's what you mentioned earlier. But you never know. All right, and then we have our last category. This is a wild card. Basically, anybody we didn't talk about for any particular reason, whether it's a stash or anything, any reason. So, Kevin, you got somebody listed here worth speculating on. You want to talk a little bit more about him?
Actually, it seems like they've figured out a solution to this problem. And I'm talking about St. Louis's problem with Matt Carpenter. I can't see him continuing to roll him out there. And they didn't today. But their solution with Tyler O'Neill back was moving Edmund over to second base. And that may be what they do more often than not for the foreseeable future. But there was a lot of talk in the spring about Gorman getting reps at second base for just this situation. And so in leagues where you are able to pick up minor leaguers and stash them, if he's available, he's somebody that may have an opportunity sooner rather than later. And I'd take a shot. Also, I've noticed in FBC leagues, a lot of these guys that were drafted as stashes have been dropped. I've dropped guys. In one league, I tried to drop Bobby Witt Jr. last week, as I said earlier. And a couple of other guys are out there. Kirilloff is available in my TGFBI league. So some of these guys are available in those leagues as well. So it's always worth taking a look. You might be surprised at who's available.
Yeah, the high single bid in TGFBI last week was Cabrian Hayes. Was dropped the week prior while he was on the IL. Obviously, he's still on the IL.
That was my league.
Oh, that was your – all right.
Yeah. I didn't go after him hard, though. So I wasn't a Hayes believer heading into the season. So I guess I know people were – I can't believe the winning bid was only $300, but – I have a really difficult time spending that much of Fab on any hitter. So
yeah, he went for, let's see.
He went for like 350, something like
350. I'm just curious to know.
I think my backup bid, I only bid $30 or something like that, which is probably way too low, but.
Okay. Yeah, his backup bid, let's see. Yeah, 309, and his backup bid was only 56. So you hate to see that. I guess it's better than no bid at all. But
theoretically, you hate to see
it. If it's not my team, I don't not hate to see
it. I'm just kidding. It was Dusty Wagner who did the bid, and he's a great player.
Yeah, of course.
Plays NFBC and a really sharp dude. He's probably right. There should have been some bigger bids because we didn't know he was going to get re-injured when this happened. So, yeah.
All right. I like all those calls out, guys. And I think that's pretty much going to sum it up for us today. Kevin, I'll give you the floor. See if you have any parting words for our listeners as far as strategy goes, you know, where you're at, anything you want to instill onto them to make things a little bit calmer when it comes to their bidding.
I think we've pretty much covered it tonight. One thing I did notice, and it goes along with what has come up multiple times this evening, check who's available. Watch who is dropped. Don't assume somebody is already rostered. All the news I'm hearing about Chris Sale seems very positive, and he could be back. We've been hearing June all along. It won't be before that. And I know that for a lot of guys coming off of TJ, it takes half a season or more to get any sort of command and control back. However, somebody like Chris Sale is available in 12% of TGFBI leagues and 35% of Yahoo leagues. And we're only talking about a month now. So if you have a spot, it might be worth taking that shot, because Chris Sale with a little bit of control problems is better than anybody else available on the waiver wire, I would say, at this point.
I'll echo everything Kevin said about checking your drops. There were some interesting drops made just last week in the main event. You saw Akil Baddoo, Corey Kluber, Andrew Vaughn all being dropped, at least in a single league. While in TGFBI, closer Richard Rodriguez was dropped in a league. So there's somebody out there who's going to have a decent option at closer as of right now. Richard Rodriguez has been lights out, even though for the Pirates, I get it. He's got 3 saves on the season. But I realized that Richard Rodriguez has only faced 2 more batters than the minimum so far this season. And Alex Kirilloff was dropped in that league that, Kevin, you're talking about.
So I hate that person. The person who dropped Richard Rodriguez, I hate them. It must be great having 3 solid closers so you can drop Richard Rodriguez. How is that? Does that feel good? Let me know, all right?
Yeah, tweet at BatFlipCrazy. Tweet him at and let him know.
For sure. Just if anybody has any saves they want to share with me, please.
Is that
just
how this works?
I'll take them. Just DM me. Just please.
All right. If there's any other players you're thinking about bidding on and you want us to discuss them, let us know by emailing us at onthewirepod at gmail.com. You can shoot us a DM on the Twitter at onthewirepod, or by joining the PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you have access to the Pitcherlist Discord and the advice and banter of over 800 members, including all the incredibly smart staff just waiting to help you win your league. I'd like to once again thank Toby for joining us on this episode. Toby, could you remind everybody where they can find you, whether it's your any writing you do or where they can hear your lovely voice?
Thank you. I appreciate those comments about my voice. You can reach me on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. That's the best place to reach me. I do have a website, batflipcrazy.com, but as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's bare bones at this point. I don't do much writing anymore. And then I have a podcast, Batflip Crazy Fantasy Baseball, which is available on all the usual platforms. I do a weekly episode with Bubba from Bench with Bubba podcast. Normally we record those on Tuesday night, so most people get them on Wednesdays. So check that out if you're interested. And yeah, definitely always excited to talk fantasy baseball and all of those fun things. So thanks so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that Tuesday, Wednesday podcast that you guys do, you break down the fab bids across NFBC as well. So it's a nice listen to this one. Go listen to Toby and Bubba later on this week to break down everything we just said in actual results as well. So if you're not listening to Batflip Crazy Podcasts, you should be, and you should change that habit right now. All right. That's going to do it for us on The Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated, of course. For myself, you can follow myself on Twitter at 80grade. It's all spelled out. And Kevin at Hasting Kevin. And keep an eye out for Kevin's weekly Fab preview article that comes out every Sunday, as well as my Fab review article titled Waiver Watcher that comes out every Tuesday or Wednesday over at pitcherlist.com. And follow Pitcherlist on the Twitter, at Pitcherlist on the Twitter as well. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we are a proud member of the Pitcherlist Podcast Network, along with 20 other incredible podcasts. Make sure to follow at Pitcherlist Pods to get updates on every new episode that drops from each of them, and give them all a listen. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Toby / Batfoot Crazy and for joining us. And for Kevin Hasting, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.